Hi, friend. I'm Sarita, and this is Missionary Life. I'm here to help you live your dream life on and off the mission field. I'm an author, life coach, former missionary, compassion fatigue, and grief expert, and working mom. I want to encourage you to design a life of purpose, authenticity, ease, and meaning where you're no longer surviving but thriving. I'm here to help you, the helpers, become emotionally, spiritually, and physically healthy. I'll interview experts in mental health and missionaries to offer you practical tools to help you heal from trauma, burnout, grief, and PTSD. I know that life often doesn't work out the way we long for. I'm here to create a safe space to navigate those disappointments and transitions with abundance so you can live your mission. My new book, Healing Her, a memoir, will be released in June 2024, and I can't wait to get it into your hands. Thank you for being here. Hi, beautiful ones. Welcome back to another episode of Missionary Life. I am so, so excited to have Ava Burkholder and Sue Einenberg. I don't know. How do I say that, Sue?
That's the hardest part of the whole thing. It's, if you think in again, out again, Einenberg.
In again. I should have clarified that before we started the call, but I'm so excited to have
no
them
worries.
Here
it's not
with
the first
me.
Time.
They have created a lovely book called Grit to Stay, Grace to Go. And I just feel like this is such an important topic for missions because we're constantly trying to figure out how to build resilience on the field, how to develop that grit where we can actually remain and we don't have to leave prematurely. And it's a mindset and it's a habit and a practice. And we're going to learn some tools today for building that resilience and that grit, which I love that word. And this is near and dear to my heart because when I left the field, I struggled with a lot of guilt and shame around feeling like I'd failed, like that I had to leave early. And I just didn't realize that actually God had given me the grace to leave. And so I love that that grace is in the title as well, because I think that there is a grace that we can receive when we are having to decide about whether it's time to leave the field or not. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit as well. So I'm just going to introduce Ava and Sue. So Ava Burkholder is a missionary kid, wife, mother, former global worker, author, and member care lead for Christar? Okay, a lot of blurbs here today. She and her husband live in Texas, where she rejuvenates by crafting and spending time with her two sons and their wives. And Sue, and I'm not going to say your last name so I don't murder it, has been involved with Cross Culture Ministry since 1986. Okay. She's lived on 4 different continents seeking to love and serve God. She's married to Don, and they have 4 children. Their spouse has 12 grandchildren. It's amazing. And she's an author and speaker. She likes playing word games, reading mysteries, and eating chocolate, not necessarily at the same time. Although I do love to eat chocolate while I am reading a book. Welcome, ladies. So I would love to start off with, I want to hear a little bit more about you guys, because this is actually our first time meeting. And I want to hear more of your personal experiences and stories around what it was like growing up as, you know, as an MK and, you know, how you developed some of this grit and resilience during adversity.
I was born and raised in Papua New Guinea. My parents were Bible translators with Wycliffe Bible Translators. My dad was a farm boy, and so he just knew how to, like, he built our house, and he set up the electricity, and we had, you know, I had to use an outhouse in the early days or wash in the river if I wanted to, and my mom boiled the water on the stove to do our dishes. And so, actually, I found that...
You were prepared for a mission life.
I found that when I went, I wasn't in a global village setting. I was in a little town, and so I actually had more amenities than my mother had. And so when it came to boiling my water or cleaning my vegetables with, you know, bleach or whatever, I could do all that stuff. I knew all of that. So I think actually growing up did help me with those kind of issues that sometimes some people have to build a grit for just that daily stuff.
Yeah, the daily challenges can be so hard, and often we don't expect those to be the things that really start to run us down, you know. But I remember, you know, after the power goes out for the 1,000th time, and you got to wash your laundry by hand, and you're taking another cold bucket shower, and the mosquitoes are attacking you through your net, and you know, there's no fan, there's no AC, and different things like that. It's just, it definitely does wear on you. So it sounds like you had a really good entry into missionary life very early. And what about you, Sue?
Yeah, I didn't really start early. And I was just thinking about when we arrived in the Middle East and I bought this little packet of dried onions that I thought would be helpful. And I was looking at it and there were things crawling in it.
Oh gosh.
And so I called my team leader and I said, look, I bought these dried onions and there's things moving in there. And she goes, that's really normal. Just put it in the freezer and it will, you know, they'll die. And then you just use it in food. And I'm like, oh, thank you so much. And then I hung up and threw it away.
I'm not getting these bugs in my system.
I wasn't quite ready to jump in. So yeah, it took me a while to develop that grit and realize things like that are normal.
Yeah. It's part of daily life there, getting some bugs or some weevils or something in your food.
Using bleach on vegetables. Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Wow. Yeah. Those are amazing experiences, ladies. So I wanted to read this quote from, I believe this is from your book. It says, ministry doesn't just happen in the miraculous. It shines through the mundane. And because God works through it all, he receives the glory. Sometimes we feel his presence and ministry flows. Other times, though, we know that God is present, but it takes sheer determination on our part to get through one more day. So you guys talk a lot about this concept of developing grit during challenges. And so can you tell me more about, you know, why you feel this is so important to have grit, why you wrote this book, and some of the things that you can do to maybe build this resilience and this grit?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, the only way to develop endurance is to endure.
Yeah.
And so I think each time that I didn't run away from something that was hard, a little more grit developed in me. Yeah. And I remember our first term feeling overwhelmed with all there was to do. You know, there was language study, there was laundry, cooking, cleaning, team meetings. I was parenting three little kids and we were having our fourth one. And
wow.
I remember asking a friend to watch our kids, and Don and I went to the only, I think it was a Pizza Hut. It was the only like foreign type restaurant that was available at that time.
Yeah.
And I had my speech all prepared. I can't do this anymore. It's all too hard. The language is hard. I can't keep up. And I finished my speech and he said, you know what, let's get some help.
Mm.
And so he came up with this idea of hiring a lady to come clean our apartment once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing what a world of difference that made, because it took off this one huge burden.
Yes.
So that we could handle, you know, all the other priorities. And so in time, you know, I learned a little more language and the culture and developed friendships. I learned how to do some things that I didn't have appliances for that I had in the US.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it. I didn't realize it at the time, but through each adjustment and decision to stay, I was also developing grit.
Mm.
And those little decisions helped with the bigger things, like, you know, the fear and dread I felt when my husband was called in for police interviews, or when other workers were imprisoned or deported, or when terrorist activities increased in the city, when teammates left, all of these things that are just super hard. But each time I had that desire to escape, to go to somewhere easier, maybe go live in my parents' basement where I always felt safe. It was the Lord who just gave that grit and grace to help each moment when that decision came of wanting to run away or wanting to stay.
How did that look like for you, you know, getting that determination? Would you spend time with God in your prayer times and then he would speak a word to you that could help you, you know, realize that you could stay? Or did you have to grieve and process a lot of things? Or what were the things that you did to really, you know, get that determination back in your soul to be able to continue going on?
I think the word of God was huge in just finding promises and remembering truth. And also people.
Yeah.
You know, I remember one point when, you know, people were getting kicked out, and sometimes spouses would leave and they weren't allowed back into the country. And I thought, okay, I can handle, you know, packing our things up and the four kids. But, you know, this is back in the day when computers were really huge. And I was like, I don't know how to put that back in the box. And that became my my what focal point, my stress point. I can't get it in the box. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
And I remember we were going to the international church and I am, you know, people would say, how are you doing? And I would say, I'm doing fine. You know, it's a little bit hard. And one man with a different agency, we were talking and I said, but I don't know how to put the computer back in the box. And he just said, you know, Sue, I'll come over and do that for you. If you need to do it, don't worry about it. And it was like, oh, you know, so God uses people to bring that encouragement at the right time.
That's so true. So yeah, I found that so much in my own life. I remember I was going through a really difficult time when we were living in Uganda, and there had been some deaths in our community of some of the women and children that we were serving. We served a very high-risk population of women and girls in sex trafficking, and there was a lot of AIDS. And so we just dealt with death on a continual basis. And so I remember I had some volunteers that were short-term, and then they would leave, and I'd like, get like attached to them, and then they would leave. And it was just heart-wrenching to constantly be in flux. And then I met this girl and she was at this little cafe and my husband cracked a Chuck Norris joke and she had the response to the Chuck Norris joke. And then we all started laughing and she had a really bad placement with her organization. It was an NGO and she just ended up coming to live with us. And she stayed with us for like a year and we became best friends. And honestly, that really did transform a lot of my experiences. You know, I was still obviously spending a lot of time on the concrete floors with tissues and praying and journaling and asking God to speak to me. But it was also nice to be able to come home at the end of the day, you know, and see her there. And she's like, hey, do you want to talk? Do you want to chat? You know, and it was, community is such a profound healing thing, especially, and it is really rare on the mission field. I think it's really hard to find. You have to really go after it. You have to put yourself out there and you have to actually take the risk of trusting and opening your heart again, because so many times people do leave. And so your heart gets a little hardened. And so you have to stay soft and stay tender. Yeah. What about you, Ava?
Yeah, we do speak about that a lot in our book about that, letting your heart be tender instead of hard when teammates leave and how to do that.
Yeah,
that was a big part of my story. We did seem to have, I don't know if it was any higher turnover than anyone else, but it was enough that it was hard. We also experienced some crises and some tragic events, and God used those to develop my grit. Sometimes when I tell them, I don't mean to make them sound trite, and I don't want to parade them like trophies that I went through all these things, but in a short period of time, we had an expat, a teammate and a national teammate who died suddenly, and one was through severe burns, which was really hard. We had a teammate who was stabbed multiple times in a robbery attempt, and he had to be medically evacuated and then subsequently left the field.
Wow.
We were evacuated in the middle of the night because of Muslim rioting in our city, actually the whole island, and we just didn't know if we would be able to go back. For 3 weeks, we were out on a neighboring island, and just all of these things together, from a practical standpoint, I learned the importance of peer debriefing the hard way. We had to do it. We had to sit down together. We had to talk about these things as soon as they happened. Had to learn how to do that. Our agency, this was in the early days of member care. Our agency did send us a couple counselors on site. To help us to learn some of these skills and get through them. It was my first experience with real grief of someone that was really close to me and really dear to me, both of these women, and how to grieve, and not really having any books or anything on it. The Lord just, I think, just turning to Him and learning utter dependence on Him through all of these things. And He just always gave us the next help when we needed it. There was always, when we would say, we don't know what to do, He would send a book or a person or a counselor or something.
Yeah.
And we could go to the next thing. And so I think just that utter dependence on Him, learning that He would strengthen and provide if He wanted us there. And He helped.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. I feel like there's so much compounding grief on the mission field.
Yeah.
So it's not usually like one thing, you know, that leads to burnout or to compassion fatigue. And it's usually just all of these losses piling on top of each other. And so it can be the loss of a friend or someone in your community. It can be just, you know, the the strain of the wear and tear of the difficulties of living life on the field. Your marriage can suffer, your kids can be suffering, you know, all these different things sort of pile on each other. And I love what you said about just having that space to grieve and receive that counseling. I'm so glad that your agency provided that, because I know so many missionaries that tell me that they don't have that and they didn't have that. And so I think that that debriefing is so important to actually stop and grieve the losses as they're happening. Otherwise, they just kind of pile high inside of you. And then that grief is going to come out some way. You know, it's going to come out in some kind of explosion or resentment or anger or blowout or nervous breakdown or illness or something. You know, it's going to come out. And so really having that space and time to grieve well is huge. It's almost like, I feel like on the mission field, God is so close. There's like this supernatural presence that happens. And I remember just feeling like when I was in the mission field, God answered so many of my prayers. I feel like now in my daily life, you know, as like a mom and like I'm working and like I'm in the States and my life is so much easier than it was back then. It's harder for me to see like all the gifts and all the answered prayers. But over there, I feel like everything was so raw and so real. And I was so desperate that I saw so many answered prayers when I needed them. And I think that that's the grace, you know, that you guys are talking about. And so you guys talked about God uses the losses and challenges to build our endurance. And so what does that look like to build this endurance and this resilience? You know, how do you kind of practically put that in place? You know, you've gone through something devastating, something terrible has happened. You know, where do you think that you can start to build endurance? Is it a way that you talk to yourself? Is it like, you know, do you give yourself a pep talk? How does God use, you know, these losses to give us endurance and to help us, you know, finish the race?
I think one of the key things for me in building endurance is to embrace the truth. Because when I'm in the midst of a struggle or facing a challenge, it just amazes me how quickly lies surface that I would never say I believed, but they come up and it's like I start acting on those rather than remembering truth. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, we recently, about 9 months ago, we transitioned back to the U.S. Mm-hmm. and this was our seventh and hopefully last international move. And so I knew it wasn't going to be easy, right? But what surprised me is that here in my home country, when things are confusing or I don't quite fit in like I thought I would, I found myself thinking it was so much easier in Spain. And when I was in Spain and I was in the process of renewing a visa or trying to navigate medical needs using Google Translate, I just remember thinking, you know, oh, it would be so much easier in America. And so these lies that it's always going to be easier somewhere else or some other time, that just sows this discontent in my soul. But the truth is that God is with me and he uses the hard, and it's going to come no matter where we live or how old we are. These challenges are going to come. And God reminds us of truth that, hey, I am with you now, today, and I'm going to help you handle. Don't long for another place or, you know, don't let that discontent keep roiling, you know, but just trust me. I'm with you. I'm going to help you deal with this. And just facing that truth and speaking truth to myself.
Yes.
You know, finding these verses, like there's a, I think it was in Deborah's song in Judges, where march on my soul, be strong. And just saying that to myself, that God's going to give me the strength to do this. I think truth will help us build endurance.
That's so powerful. Yeah, that's exactly, I think, what I found in my experience. I went through, we had some counselors visit to train our teams in counseling, and they taught us theophostic prayer, TPM. It's like a kind of inner healing method, but essentially the entire thing is about bringing your pain before Jesus and then realizing what the lies are that the enemy has spoken, and then letting God speak his truth into those lies. And when God speaks truth to your heart, it just like shatters all the lies, and it helps you. It gives you hope, and it gives you that sense of comfort that you need just to take one next step. And I've used that in my life ever since, and it's been a powerful tool just for exchanging those lies for truth. So what about you, Eva?
Yeah, I had to start with my theology, and I didn't realize it until I was in the middle of all of these troubles and crises, that I had a view that because I had been obedient and followed God, especially gone to the ends of the earth, that I shouldn't have to, I shouldn't have to suffer. And I never said it out loud.
Yes, I know that one.
Never
well.
Said it out loud, but I realized that that's what I was believing. And so I had to go back to scripture and look again and say, what does God say about suffering? What does he say about what we're promised and what we're not promised? And that really, that's an Old Testament view of that, you know, if you obey, then you have blessing. Well, yeah, I have blessing. I'm just not defining the blessing the way the way that Christ defines the blessing. And so I had to go back and just do that self-examination. And then through that also, the other things came up, like some judgment and cynicism that I was feeling against my teammates when they left, looking at their reasons why they left, or just getting to where I'm not going to say goodbye to yet another person or welcome another person because, and I had to just take all of those things and cry out to the Lord and say, you know, what are you doing? And he just kept saying, I'm building my church. I know what I'm doing it my way. And so just, I think just some real self-examination helped me to do that and to look at truth, like Sue was saying. I think sometimes when all of these crises and teammates leaving, we kind of just want to say, okay, shut the door, move on, you know, avoid it, put it aside. Okay, they're gone. I can keep going instead of wrestling with it. Taking the questions to the Lord, I think that builds resilience when we really face those things and deal with them and reflect on them and process them and debrief and even counseling and all of that play into helping us build on resilience.
Yeah, that's so true. I think that one of the big things that being a missionary taught me was that everything that has purpose or value or everything that is beautiful and good, or that you are striving to make, you know, the world a better place, it involves suffering, right? Because it's the struggle. It's the struggle. You know, we're trying to bring, you know, heaven to earth. We're trying to bring love into dark places. And so everything that you want in your life, whether it's, you know, this a career or that many people will get saved or whatever it is, it all involves suffering. It all involves sacrifice, you know. We know that from motherhood, you know, it's like, we love our kids. We love our kids. And yet it's this relationship and the way that we want to raise them to be godly, like it involves sacrifice and struggle, and it's all part of the journey. And so I think that you're so right about that. So I want to kind of shift gears here a little bit and talk about this idea of grace to go, because I love the way you guys put that, because I find so many missionaries, and this was myself included, struggle with that guilt. And, you know, we, like you said, we have so many of these different theologies we go to the mission field with, you know, like for me, one was like martyrdom. So, if I suffer for God, then he's going to love me more. And if I do this job right and be successful, then I'm going to gain more of his love. You know, it's kind of similar to these theologies of suffering that we have, you know, if I'm like the grade A student, like the grade A missionary, then I'm going to be able to get through this unscathed. And also, you know, I'm going to somehow earn points, you know, in heaven's scorecard. And so I had some messed up theology as well around that. And so the leaving produced such shame and guilt, because it seemed like I hadn't gotten that gold star. It seemed like I'd somehow missed the mark. And I even had, you know, board members and people that didn't understand how burned out I was and why my physical health and all of that. And you know, even like, okay, you just need to finish the race. You just need to finish the race. You know, and I'm just like, I'm done. Like the race has like come and gone and I'm flat on the ground and, you know, like there's just nothing left, you know, but there is some of that. And I think it's really harmful theology when we, you know, we talk to people about finishing the race, and because how can you know what someone else's race, you know, finished looks like, you know, how can you evaluate that for them? As you know, missionaries are processing, okay, when it is it time for me to leave? Like, when have I endured? And then now I'm just, you know, done. Or now God's actually lifting the grace. And I think that's what happened in my experience, was the grace just kind of lifted to be there, where what I could normally handle before, I could no longer like handle anymore. And there were some other reasons there too. Like, we were trying to start a family and I had been through a miscarriage that it just would not, like, it was an ectopic pregnancy. So where the hospitals were, where we were, it was not feasible for me to be there if I wanted to try to get pregnant again. And there was a lot of things there, but I just want to know kind of from you guys, how can you advise missionaries who are in this process of like, okay, do I just keep pushing through and keep enduring and keep suffering? Or is there grace there to depart?
Yeah. I just think that's where, you know, as we pray and pray honestly before God, this is, I don't know if I want to be here anymore. I need your wisdom and guidance. Just prayer is really huge. And talking with trusted others, people who we, you know, feel connected to, or people who have had experience, or, you know, coaches, counselors, that people who are just really good resource people. But one of the important things that I think, when we choose whoever it is that we're going to talk to, I think it needs to be somebody who's for us, right? For our well-being, but also somebody who understands the value of the Great Commission, right? So it's somebody who's for me, but also understands, you know, that Great Commission and the value that we, you know, hold to that as cross-cultural workers. And I think throughout the book, as Eva and I worked on it, we just trying to encourage people to stay as long as God wants them there, but being free to leave. And I think the thing we wanted to guard against was making a reactive decision, or waiting till we're at the point where, you know, we feel like we just can't do it anymore. So in the book, we ask about 13 questions. In the third section where it talks about, do I stay or do I go? How do I decide? And I think working through these questions just make it a prayerful, intentional, and proactive decision. And I like, one of the most important questions I think we ask in the book is, what changes need to occur for me to stay? So before deciding to leave, work through, like, what have been some of my frustrations and what do I need to do in order to really thrive here? And it could be that the things we're involved in don't match our strengths. It could be that the team has a different ministry focus than we anticipated. It could be that we're so involved in ministry and so busy because needs are so pressing, right? There's just so much to do that we forget about life-giving activities or having a weekly Sabbath or taking a vacation. And thinking through, okay, if I could stay, what do I need to change in order to stay? I think asking these kind of questions help us to come at it from a different perspective that's more thoughtful and intentional, and, you know, you're being proactive in thinking through some of these questions that we ask.
That's so good. Do you remember any of the other questions that you ask in the book? I'm so curious.
Eva helped me out. We had, like, you know, what's the difference between calling and commission? Who do I talk to and when?
Yeah, that's the one I wanted to focus on. The why. The why do we want to transition? I think because there's typically lots of reasons. There isn't just one reason. And we don't tell everybody every reason, and we shouldn't. But getting to our primary reason and being honest with ourselves, I think, helps, because then we can figure out what our motivation is. Are we doing this out of fear? Are we running from something or from someone? You know, what are the most important reasons and why? Maybe some of those reasons are solvable, like Sue just said. I remember when we left Indonesia, it was primarily because my husband wanted to retool and become a counselor. And that's really what we shared with people. And that was true. But there were other reasons that we didn't share with everyone that were personal family reasons. Mm-hmm. And his niche was important and his role was important, but we had to consider our family's well-being as well. So things like medical or emotional needs of your children or your spouse, those can also help you determine if it's time to go. We just think that, you'll hear us say it again, but reflectively, proactively, being intentional, taking that time to really think through a decision. And now, I know, of course, there's times when people are forced to leave abruptly, and that reflection has to come afterwards, and you have to do the processing and the afterwards. But if you can, and you have the ability to take your time, to not rush into it, and kind of like what you referred to earlier, to not do it from a place of burnout or grief or fatigue, but to work at getting yourself healthy and in a good place before you make a decision, that's this huge.
Yeah, for sure. I know it's so difficult because sometimes you meet your end point, and sometimes that is, I remember God speaking to me and telling me, you know, that it was time to leave. And I actually really fought against it. Like, I didn't actually want to go.
There's that too.
And so even though I was exhausted, even though I was tired, and even though I was in suffering, all these things, I didn't actually want to leave Uganda. It had been my home for 7 years, and I thought I would live my rest of my life there. And so I remember when the Lord started speaking to me about it, and like you were saying, I had kind of tried all these different things to try to get it to work, you know? So I was like, okay, what would I need to be able to continue to do my job? You know, and I was like, okay, I'd need like 10 different people to fill the different roles, because I was running a nonprofit. It was a, you know, ministry and international nonprofit. And so it was like, okay, sat down and like wrote out all the roles and how I would need to delegate them in order to actually not continue burning out. And, you know, for a couple of years, looked for those people, tried to find them, you know, prayed, tried to raise money for them, all these things. And then, you know, eventually kind of realizing that that was partially God's answer as well. Like, he was not sending the people. It was not happening. Like, it was like, okay, like, you know, you need to like wake up here a little bit. And so I think that, like you said, sometimes you can see the circumstances, and has God given this provision? Has he given this grace, or is that kind of dissipating? And it would be ideal if people can make decisions not under duress, but I know that a lot of people have to make them under duress.
Certainly.
You know,
and God will give grace for that as well.
Yeah, that's good. So I'd love to talk to you about how you can communicate with your sending organization or church or friends and family about this departure, because I know so many people. I remember I just felt physically ill trying to think about sending that email out and being, you know, I felt like they were going to judge me. You know, I thought they were going to think that I hadn't done a good job or finished well, or I thought that they would think that I was giving up when I knew that I was really following what God had said. And so it was really challenging. And there was a little bit of fear of man in there as well, you know, where I was really scared what everybody was thinking of me and how they would respond. So I just felt so sick. And I didn't know quite how to phrase it, or, you know, it's so hard to know how to communicate sometimes, especially with team members, those that have been supporting you for years, you know, sending donations, and you've been sending back all these reports, and they're invested too, you know, and so it feels like kind of a death for everyone, you know, because everybody's been so invested in the mission. So how do you recommend having these conversations, and what are some things that people can say that can kind of help make that process easier for them?
Yeah, I think this is one of the trickiest things that we have to deal with, because we don't want to start talking about it too soon, right? Because then teammates are stressed out, supporters are confused, churches are like, well, what do you want it? What are we going to do, right? But if you wait until too late, then it comes out more like an announcement, right? It's just really hard trying to figure out exactly the best way to do that. And this is where I think having a close friend or a coach, one missionary was saying that she was ready to just give up, but it was a coach who asked her questions and helped her think through that gave her, I don't know, the insights and information that she needed to make good decisions. And so I think having somebody that we can actually talk with about this, that's, you know, for me and understands the Great Commission, right? But not just talking about the decision itself, but also the process of how we make the decision and the timing of the decision. And I don't know, even I talked about this a little bit, it seems like some organizations might have clearer procedures than others for this decision-making process. We're not sure, but it'd be really good to find out if you're with an organization what those guidelines are. But I think being open and finding somebody that we trust, that we can, that will pray with us and talk with us and just have that person so that we're not trying to make this decision on our own. Or sometimes we get so focused on the decision itself, we lose objectivity, we lose insight. It's really helpful coming from someone else. So I think having someone walk with us through not only the decision-making itself, but also the process of how we go about making that decision would be really helpful.
Yeah. And almost like in some sense, it's helpful, I think, to get some buy-in from people, like get some ownership where they feel like you're not just dropping a bomb on them, but that there was some discussion ahead of time, like, hey, this is what I'm considering. These are my reasons. This is what I believe God's saying to my heart. Would love for you to like pray into this with me, or, you know, something where it gives a little bit of a heads up and it's maybe not as shocking as okay, you know, in 3 months, I'm out of here, you know? So Ava, do you have anything, any recommendations for people when they're communicating?
That's kind of where I was going to go with it too, because I, as a member care provider, I hear those stories of, well, they just left and they didn't ask our opinion or they didn't ask. And I really am concerned that if teams want to have that buy-in, they have to create environments that foster that. They have to be a team that is safe, that someone can go to and say, I'm thinking of leaving, without the teammate totally freaking out, thinking of themselves only, and beginning to judge. And so it really is both sides. I really would like to see more growth and understanding on both sides, that the one staying can learn how to listen without the fear and judgment, and give input that's for the best of the other person. This is really hard. It takes real maturity to be able to do this, and to then bless the person who goes, and not make them feel guilt-ridden and guilty. But on the other hand, the one that's going needs to understand how hard it is for those that are staying. And and also be considerate about how they invite them into the conversation and bring them along. The more they understand, the more they feel heard, the more they're going to accept their decision. And it's really hard. It's hard to go. It's hard to stay. It's hard for both of them. And I think that if they can understand that, that's what I would love. Now, on a practical side, we have told some folks in our organization at least 6 months is a kind of a good guideline. I don't know if that's not been tested. I'm just sort of throwing that out. But I think it gives at least enough time to feel like it's you've had time to work through things without it being dragged on.
Sure. Yeah, that's so helpful. I think that's so wise, because you cannot really have trust if there's no safety in the relationship. So if the sending org or the team members are not creating that environment, of course you're not going to be vulnerable with them. You're not going to open up and share about these struggles. So that has to be a huge, huge piece of it. And so when they are communicating with people back home, I often find that a lot of missionaries, when they return, they're like, oh, like I lost all of my support, even though this is like a desperate time for me when I'm trying to set up a home. I need a car now. I need to get pots and pans for my house. I need to get my kids to see the doctor, you know, like all the practical needs you have when you return. And yet that can be a time when people lose that support that they need to like buoy them through the next phase. And so how can they communicate with people back home, churches, seniors, friends, you know, about this need for support during this time period, that it's really important not to just have everything drop off, because that's a really desperate place to be.
I definitely walk with our workers through this process. And often we encourage them to just make it like a home assignment, because our churches understand home assignment. They understand that you still get your support mm-hmm. through a home assignment, and that this is a time to visit each of their partners to be able to explain their plans and to talk about what they're doing. So if churches would at least gift them yeah. the length of a home assignment to make this transition, we recommend that. And then one other thing I suggest to them yeah. is that they'll communicate to their partners that their agency, and in this case, usually for us, it's me and our member care department, is walking with them, that they're not just sort of doing this willy-nilly out there making their own decisions and living off of people's mm. money, but that the agency is walking them through this exit process. I think people are understanding of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, I unfortunately, because I started my own nonprofit, I didn't have a member care team or I didn't have any of that. So it was really tough for me when I came back because, you know, my husband just had to go out and find yeah. a job, like basically before we, you know, landed because we just needed something to keep us afloat. I was still yeah. funding the ministry overseas and still involved. And so it was very difficult to, yeah, it was hard to communicate. I think I tried to just let people know it was going to be a difficult time. I tried to give them some resources on reentry that they could read about and tried to let them know that we appreciated and valued their support through the years. And that this was going to be a tough transition for us because it had been our home and that we really looked forward to, you know, continuing to be part of their lives and everything like that. But it is so difficult, like that language and it requires a certain level of honesty, like being honest with yourself and then being vulnerable with them, but also realizing that not setting yourself up with the unrealistic expectations that everybody's going to understand, yeah. you know, because some yeah. people won't, some people won't, and some people might say hurtful things and some people might withdraw their support and that does hurt. But I think you have to have sort of a steely sense of in your gut, your own truth and like what God has spoken to you and like what you know in your, mm-hmm. in your gut and just being in integrity with that. Because if you don't have that solid plumb line, when people start saying things or doing things that are hurtful or not helpful, not supportive to you, that's gonna yeah. rock you, you
absolutely.
Know? And so do you guys have any wisdom that you would offer around that?
I just think communicating with honesty, humility, and, you know, recognizing that God is our provider. And when I make with our recent transition to the States, you know, will people understand? Because at our age, people think we're retiring, right? Right? So it's like, no, we still want to be involved. We're still this. But just recognizing that God is our provider. And we really felt like this was the move God wanted us to make at this particular time. And if some people drop support, that's okay. We're so grateful, yeah. you know, that they've supported us for so many years. If people want to continue our support, we're so grateful. But it's really God is mm-hmm. the one who's our provider. And I've had to come back to this truth again and again, because I'm like looking at our support level and trying to figure out what's going to happen. And it's like, you know, God, you have been our yes. provider before we were born, mm-hmm. right? Like you're the one who's promised to take care of us. And just coming back to God is the one who's going to provide and sustain and take care of us. And remembering that when I start getting a little nervous yeah, or fearful.
That's so beautiful. And it's so true. Like he's our father and we're his children. And sometimes we're so focused on the ministry mm-hmm. and the missions that we forget that we're also his kids. And we're so focused on loving all of his children out there in the world that we're like, oh yeah, like you are a good father and you care for us. I remember, you know, having a lot of these anxieties about moving back to the States and what are we going to do for money and where are we going to live and not knowing where we should land. And then, yeah, my husband sent out some stuff about consulting and he got a job, mm-hmm. was able to get a job before we came back. And that was because of prayer, you know, that was something that the Lord provided, even though he'd been gone, you know, mm-hmm. for years, he just plugged back into his network of friends and he was able to get something solid for us while I just tried to recover physically, you know, from all the illnesses that I was experiencing. Mm-hmm. And so it really did give me space and yeah. time to rest and like God to heal me. Mm-hmm. So he provided that, like he provided a counselor and a life coach and got a naturopath, you know, really like dug deep into like healing myself. And he really did provide all of that. And so, you know, if you're listening and you're worried about that next phase, I just want you to know that, that he is for you, you know, and he has seen what you have done and your sacrifices, and he loves you regardless of whether you live in Uganda or Papua New Guinea or Spain or United States, like he's still going to love you the same. And that was something it took me a while to really start believing that, okay, if I wasn't serving him in this very overt way, was his love for me just as deep, you know, and just really coming to understand that it was. Guys, this has been an awesome conversation. You are so lovely. And I just really have learned a lot from your wisdom and experience. And I know that you guys have this amazing book. So Grit to Stay, Grace to Go. So where can people buy the book, connect with you guys? Do you have a website?
I actually just sent you a link about William Carey Publishing is offering like a 25% discount for people.
Okay.
And so I don't know if you can post that.
Yeah, I can in the show notes.
There's a link with a code to put in. Yeah. And you can get either the, you know, the e-copy or the hard copy. Yeah. missionbooks.org is their website.
Perfect.
It's also available on Amazon, but you get the discount through William Carey Publishing.
That's amazing. Well, what a beautiful book. And do you guys have any personal websites you want to share? Or
yeah, my website is evaburkholder.com, and you can contact me through that. I also have a devotional on the life of Mary of Nazareth, which is on Amazon. Sue has other books at William Carey as well. And your website, Sue, is your blog?
Well, I have a blog called Screams in the Desert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're both on Instagram and
Perfect. Awesome. Okay. Well, I'll make sure that I spell your names correctly so that people can find you. Maybe I need to put a pronunciation in there as well. But this has been awesome, ladies. I hope that this helps so many missionaries, and I'm really grateful.
Sarita, I want to thank you too for your help. So I have passed along your self-care book to many, many people, and just appreciate your blogs and all of that as well. So thank you.
Thank you so much. That makes me so happy to hear. Well, my dears, this has been a beautiful conversation, and I hope no matter where you are in life, you feel that you have now the grit to stay or the grace to go. The reality is, missionary life doesn't get easier or more forgiving. We just get stronger and more resilient. We all need to develop grit in the hard times when we feel weak and alone, when it seems like the forces of darkness are against us. But in that darkness is where we find intimacy with Jesus, where he meets us with his glorious light that envelops us, where he gives us the strength to go on. We cannot do it on our own. But as Heidi Baker says, in God's presence, there is always enough. Enough love, enough peace, enough hope to continue one more day. So whether you're staying or leaving, know there is grace available to you. You are God's beloved, and he will guide and protect you and provide for you, even when it seems your darkest hour. So may you be blessed in your broken places, in the places you feel you can't go on. May you know that even in this place, you are unconditionally and irrevocably loved and valuable. Until next time, my dears, be well.